This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchar, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at all of last night's action. Liverpool thumping Everton at Anfield in the Merseyside derby by 5-2. How close is Marco Silva to the sack? Seemingly very, very close. It wasn't a happy return for Jose Mourinho to Old Trafford as Manchester United beat Tottenham 2-1. So we're looking back at all of last night's action. Also, looking ahead to tonight's action, two games in the Premier League to round off these midweek fixtures. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp here on the Premier League Fan Show. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. If you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 70 20 558 if you want your voice heard, if you want to share your views, whether you're ecstatic with how your team played this week or if you're down in the dumps. Make sure you get in touch with us here on Love Sport, here on the Premier League Fan Show this afternoon. Let's look back then at last night's action. We had six fixtures in total. Remember, we had two on Tuesday night as Crystal Palace won 1-0. Against Bournemouth, and Burnley went down 4-1 at home to Manchester City. Looking at last night's action, just a quick run through of all of the scores at Anfield. It was a very, very comprehensive victory for Jurgen Klopp's side. Liverpool beating Everton by 5-2 at Old Trafford. It finished Manchester United 2, Tottenham 1. Chelsea 2, Aston Villa 1. Leicester 2, Watford 0. Wolves 2, West Ham 0. And Southampton 2, Norwich 1. Two games to come tonight. Sheffield United play Newcastle and Arsenal are at home against Brighton. Let's start with the Merseyside derby. It was a pretty crazy first half where we saw 6 goals in just 45 minutes of action at Anfield. Liverpool running out. Very, very easy winners at Anfield. Liverpool winning by 5-2. 2 goals from Divock Origi, 1 for Jordan Shaqiri, 1 for Sadio Mane, and a late goal for Jorginho Wijnaldum sealed what was a very comfortable victory for Liverpool. Probably should have been more emphatic. Before the game, a lot was made of the fact that Jurgen Klopp made 5 changes to the side. It saw no Mo Salah from the start, saw no Roberto Firmino from the start. Also on the bench, Jordan Henderson, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Alisson was suspended after being sent off on the weekend. There's no Joel Matip. So Liverpool, without plenty of players that would be in their starting 11 when everyone's fully fit and picking from a best 11. But Liverpool made light work of an Everton side that have now dropped into the bottom three. It was probably Liverpool's best performance of the season so far in an attacking sense. Conceding 2 soft goals, which I'm sure would have irritated Jurgen Klopp, and as a Liverpool fan myself, it irritated me to concede 2 very, very soft goals when Everton didn't really look like they were creating that many good chances. But in the attacking third, it was absolutely exquisite. I mean, any of those 4 goals in the first half, you can just wax lyrical about every single one. It started off inside the opening 10 minutes with a great ball through by Sadio Mane into the path of Divock Origi. Beautifully weighted pass into him, which meant all he needed to do was take one touch, which took him past Pickford, and then an easy one second time because there was an open goal sitting right in front of him. Liverpool doubled their advantage through Jordan Shaqiri, who hasn't played a huge number of minutes this season so far. But another beautifully laid on ball by Sadio Mane and a good, neat finish from Jordan Shaqiri. Probably the best goal of the night was the third one, where Dejan Lovren plays a long ball over the top. Divock Origi pulls the ball, plucks the ball out of the air with one touch to bring it down, and then he chips it over an oncoming Jordan Pickford. A superb finish, and even and that was actually, if you think back to some of those first few goals, Trent Alexander-Arnold's crossfield ball to Sadio Mane was absolutely phenomenal for Jordan Shaqiri's goal. And then the fourth one on the counter-attack, Trent Alexander-Arnold brings it a lot of the way down the field, plays it into Mane, who first time from just outside the box with his left foot curls it into the bottom corner. As I mentioned, Wijnaldum late on sealing what could have been a more emphatic victory. Actually, realistically, Liverpool should have won 7 or 8-0 in the game. That's how dominant Liverpool were. So obviously, Liverpool continuing their brilliant start to the season. 14 wins out of 15, 43 points, and 8 points clear of Leicester. So for the red side of Merseyside, as always, Merseyside continues to be red. For the blue side of Merseyside, it is not a particularly good time. Everton now into the relegation zone in 18th place on 14 points. Things not looking good. Marco Silva, as they say in the Telegraph today, cuts figure of man who knows fate. I think it looks like he is destined to go. We believe today that Farhad Moshiri is on Merseyside to hold talks with Marco Silva. He's already survived one emergency set of talks after losing at home to Norwich 2-0. Is very, very kind of rare, actually, in this modern era that a manager survived one set of emergency talks, let alone two. David Moyes is the man being lined up to replace him now. Whether that would just be on a short-term deal until the end of the season, we don't know yet. Even though I've never been a big fan of Marco Silva, I don't think he's a particularly good manager and he deserves a sack. I'm not sure whether David Moyes is an upgrade on Marco Silva, and I'm not sure the Everton fans will be too enamoured with that appointment. But as I mentioned, another comfortable evening for Liverpool, despite the fact that a number of key starters weren't starting for Liverpool last night. Those players that came in, those players that haven't played a huge number of minutes, Jerdan Shaqiri, Adam Lallana, Divock Origi, they played brilliantly last night. I tell you what, Divock Origi was phenomenal. He really was causing Yerry Mina all sorts of problems. You think back to the Champions League semi-final second leg at home against Barcelona where Divock Origi scored twice. He was phenomenal on that night. This is probably up there as one of his best Liverpool performances. He was absolutely outstanding. And the opportunity to rest the likes of Mo Salah, not even have to bring him on, I'm sure was a big, big boost for Jurgen Klopp. Liverpool travelled to Bournemouth on the weekend for Everton. How much longer? We expect potentially a decision to be made later today as to whether Marco Silva will keep his job. At Old Trafford, it was obviously a pretty significant game, not just because these are two big clubs in England, but also the fact that it was Jose's return to Old Trafford. And we said yesterday how there were going to be headlines created no matter what happened. Well, that was certainly the case. Manchester United took the lead through Marcus Rashford. Dele Alli then equalised pretty well for Tottenham, but Rashford scored a penalty in the second half to seal all 3 points, although there was a pretty patronising pat on the head from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to Jose Mourinho. I don't think exactly Ole Gunnar Solskjaer you can do that, considering you're not a very good manager and Manchester United aren't doing very well. It's rather strange that you would do that. And if it had been the other way around, I'm sure that everyone would have been talking about Jose Mourinho and how disrespectful he was if he did that the other way around. And yet, seemingly, it's Solskjaer and he doesn't do it. But the pressure does not come off as Solskjaer. Manchester United travel to the Etihad to take on City rivals Manchester City on the weekend. Interestingly, if you look at the stats on Jose's return to management at Spurs, they've conceded two goals in each of his first four games in charge. Now, Jose's always been praised for his ability to have organised defences and make sure his team is well set up. Well, conceding a couple of goals in every single one of his first four games isn't exactly a great run of defensive form, and they are looking pretty vulnerable, as they were under Pochettino in a defensive sense. At Stamford Bridge, it was obviously quite a significant game in terms of the personnel in the dugouts. Obviously, Frank Lampard came up against Dean Smith in the playoff final last season when Lampard was at Derby, which obviously Dean Smith won. And also the fact that John Terry is on Dean Smith's coaching staff, so he was given a pretty good reception at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea went running out 2-1 winners. Tammy Abraham returned from an injury which prevented him from playing on the weekend against West Ham. He returned with a goal as Chelsea are in fourth place at the moment, 6 points clear of fifth place. Wolves, who themselves beat West Ham 2-0, it kind of felt like a predictable result and sums up where West Ham are at the moment. A few days ago, they were beating Chelsea away from home and it was all great. And then suddenly a few days later, past West Ham fans brought back down to earth. At the King Power Stadium, Leicester continue their position in second place, 8 points behind Liverpool after winning 2-0 at home against Watford. Goals from Jamie Vardy and James Maddison securing all 3 points, although VAR in the spotlight again. I'm not really sure how Jamie Vardy wasn't given a penalty when Adrian Mariappa quite clearly stepped on his foot. He was nowhere near the ball, and that seems strange why that wasn't overturned. Obviously, Watford still haven't appointed a new manager. When they sacked Kike Sanchez-Flores on Sunday, they said that within 24 hours they would have a manager by the latest on Monday. Well, we're now here on Thursday and still no one is in. Now, You ask the question, why is that? Is it because people have turned them down? Is it because they're undecided on who's the right person? Who knows? But another defeat for Watford. They are stranded at the bottom of the table, 3 points behind Norwich, 7 points now from safety. Things not looking good for Watford. And the final game from last night was down on the south coast. Two sides that started the night in the relegation zone. Southampton against Norwich. Southampton had a massive result on the weekend where they came from 1-0 down at home against Watford to win 2-1, where they won 2-1 again last night. Danny Ings again scoring, and I'm really pleased for Danny Ings that he's got over these injuries. You ask any Liverpool fan like myself about Danny Ings, and I think you're only going to hear praise for him and hoping that he does really well, as long as it's not directly against Liverpool. But he's in really good form. 8 goals for the season now. And his first 6 goals of the season, those had all come in games that Southampton hadn't won, but the last two have proved absolutely crucial for Southampton. They beat Norwich, although Norwich might feel with a couple of opportunities they had, they could have come away with at least something from the game. And it takes Southampton out of the bottom three and puts Everton in their place. So a huge result for Southampton. For Norwich, their form is pretty terrible, other than really that 2-0 win away at Everton a couple of weeks ago. That their form ever since beating Manchester City quite early in the season at home has been pretty terrible. They are 4 points away from safety. Southampton, as I mentioned, have now taken themselves out of the relegation zone. So a much better position for them to be in. Tonight there are two more games to come. Sheffield United are at home against Newcastle. What a start Sheffield United have made. They've dropped a few places down the table because obviously they haven't played this midweek. But if they were to win tonight, they would go into sixth place. And Chris Wilder's doing a superb job there. And the other game is at the Emirates. Arsenal take on Brighton. Arsenal still haven't appointed a new manager. Freddie Ljungberg will continue to take interim charge of the Gunners. Still no developments really on that ever since Unai Emery was sacked, but they host Graham Potter's Brighton. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, make sure you call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in touch with us this afternoon. Later in the hour, we're going to talk about Aston Villa's defeat at Chelsea and talk about Jack Grealish. How good is Jack Grealish? Is he ready to make the step up into Champions League football? We'll also talk about Norwich, a frustrating loss at Southampton. Could it have been more for them? But up next, we'll continue to react to last night's Merseyside derby. Love Sport. Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch, make sure you call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number and share your views on your Premier League club. As I mentioned, we've been talking about the Merseyside derby. A fantastic night for Liverpool fans like myself, perhaps not such a good night if you are an Everton fan, not only losing 5-2 in the Merseyside derby, but also discovering that that now leaves Everton in 18th place in the relegation zone. Marco Silva hanging by the thinnest of threads, and is David Moyes about to replace him and make a return to Goodison Park? Earlier on the Breakfast Show, Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by the ex-Everton forward George Telfer, obviously reacting to last night, and George didn't exactly seem particularly enamoured with last night's display.
To be perfectly honest, I got up this morning and I thought it was all a bad dream, to be perfectly honest. You know, there's so many disappointed Evertonians at the moment, and we looked abysmal at times last night, and to get beat 5-2, you know, I'm absolutely gutted, to be perfectly honest. A lot of Evertonians would be totally dismayed because, you know, we shouldn't really be in this situation. And I find it amazing that we are, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, well, look, obviously watching the goals back, and we're talking about fantastic passes from the likes of Henderson and a couple of the Liverpool lads, but at the same time, they're frustrating goals for Everton to concede, I bet. It's essentially long balls over the top, which they haven't defended particularly well.
That's right. You know, they were Liverpool goals were well orchestrated and well taken, and the passing was absolutely superb. But, you know, we played three centre-backs, you know, and we should be really dealing with situations like that. But not taking anything away from Liverpool. They were good goals, weren't they?
Look, let's be honest, Everton do find themselves in the relegation zone after playing at least 15 Premier League matches, and this is for the first time since April 1999. So, look, the signs aren't great, of course, for Everton, Do you think that it is as simple as a change in management? Do you think that realistically there's perhaps a slight lack of leadership? It's more of a kind of Frankenstein squad that's been patched together as opposed to a cohesive unit.
Absolutely. I think it is a bit of a Frankenstein squad. You know, I don't know whether the manager has been given the choice of what players he wants to bring in, or it's the gentleman in the background that is going out looking at players and bringing players in, you know, which really they haven't, a lot of them really haven't gelled, have they? Yeah.
No, this is the point, right? I suppose you look at all these different teams in the Premier League, and they've all got a different strategy. They've all got a different setup. I mean, Liverpool being an extreme example, where I mean, whatever it is they're doing there, it's working. You know, fantastic environment. Everyone that seems to come in, the culture's brilliant, and as a team of winners. Same at Man City, it's fair to say. Then you've got different ones further down the league, where it might be that they rely on their youth a little bit more, or maybe players from overseas or what have you. But they all seem to have a bit of a strategy. I can't figure out what Everton's long-term strategy is.
I think a lot of Evertonians will totally agree with that. Mm. What, in terms of, you know, you're absolutely right. You look at the other teams, you know, in the Premier League, and there's some really good, you know, the likes of Wolves, who have done absolutely brilliant. Crystal Palace has done, you know, they've amazed me a little bit. And they've brought in players. And Sheffield United, you know, they brought in players that want to you know, to perform. They've got the drive to get out there, you know. And I think that's what's lacking with Everton. Mm. A lot of it is down to heart, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, Everton have spent the most outside of Man City, Man United, Chelsea, and Liverpool since Mashiri took charge of Everton. It clearly hasn't worked. Do you think that it is maybe just a bit of a case of the owners kind of playing at running a football club, as opposed to having someone with a clear, distinctive vision, someone like your kind of cheeky Bajiristan type figure at City or the Fenway Sports Group at Liverpool?
I don't think he's come in and started playing at it. You know, he's come in, you know, he's a guy that wants to see Everton succeed. You know, he's put money on the table, and you know, what is it? If a club like Everton that has struggled financially for years, you know, and you look at our past squads, which never really, you know, costs, you know, the cost that you have today. You know, I think it's a little bit staggering, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. You know, the guy wants to see success at Everton, and he's provided the money, and to be perfectly honest, he hasn't got the right manager in place to deliver, to be perfectly honest.
And is the right manager David Moyes?
Well, a lot of Evertonians don't want David Moyes back, mainly to the fact that, you know, he left and didn't have a lot of success at Man United. But when David Moyes left Everton, there wasn't any animosity at the time. It seems to have grown a little bit, and I don't know why. I think it may be down to the fact that he didn't have success at United. He didn't have success when he went to Spain. And, you know, I think he'd probably be a safe pair of hands at the moment, but a lot of Evertonians would disagree with me.
OK, just quickly, is there anyone in particular that stands out for you as a good candidate?
To be perfectly honest, I can't really think of anyone. There's a lot of good managers out there. Mm. And really, I think someone fresh coming in at the moment would probably be the right thing to do. And I'll leave it at that, to be perfectly honest.
That was the former Everton forward George Telfer, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on The Breakfast Show. Remember, you can listen to Love Sport Breakfast every weekday morning between 6.30 and 10 a.m. Reacting from an Everton perspective to the Merseyside derby. Obviously, a lot of talk about Marco Silva, who, in my view, I've never really rated him, never really got the hype around him. I think he deserves the sack, but I don't really get where Everton are going with this appointment. If it is to be David Moyes, now Marco Silva, as it stands, is still the Everton manager. Now, I can't imagine that by the end of the day, he will still be the Everton manager. It just feels like another sort of Sam Allardyce trying to paper over cracks type of an appointment for Everton. I saw in one paper today them being linked with Diego Simeone. Who the hell do Everton think they are? Like, Diego Simeone is one of the best managers in the world, managing Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. Everton are in the relegation zone of the Premier League. They're rubbish. Why would Diego Simeone swap Madrid when he could, if he is going to leave Atletico, he could choose from so many top Champions League playing clubs. Why would he suddenly go to falling down, dilapidated Goodison Park to a pretty rubbish Everton team? It just makes no sense, but I don't have any sympathy at all for Everton. But the simple fact of the matter is that yesterday Everton were just coming up against the best side in England at the moment. That's just a simple fact. Liverpool are 8 points clear. You look at the Ballon d'Or from the other day, Liverpool had four of the top seven. Virgil van Dijk, Sadio Mane, Mo Salah and Alisson. The Liverpool battering Everton at Anfield is what was expected. As a Liverpool fan myself, I was expecting us to absolutely batter Everton. That was just a simple expectation. You look at the gap at the moment, Liverpool have more than triple the number of points Everton do. So this result should have been expected. And if there are any Everton fans out there that didn't think that something like this was going to happen, well, you're a little bit deluded. So it seems like, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Farhad Moshiri is on Merseyside today having talks with Marco Silva, and he's already survived one sort of situation where it felt like he was gone after losing 2-0 at home to Norwich. I don't imagine he's going to keep his job. The indication is that David Moyes will come in on a temporary basis until the end of the season. But where are Everton really going with the Everton fans out there? Call us an 0208 702558 if you've got a view on that one. Where are Everton going? And as they mentioned during that chat with George Telford there, that Everton have spent so much money. They've spent millions and millions and millions under Farhad Moshiri. So it's not a case of managers not being backed by the owner and not given the sufficient funds to improve this squad. They have spent so much money on players over the last 3 or 4 years, and a lot of them are rubbish, and they've massively overpaid for either bang average players or below average players. That's just a simple fact of the matter. Again, though, even though I personally don't rate Marco Silva as a manager, it's not just simply a case of Marco Silva going and suddenly things are going to dramatically turn around. They might change to some extent, but there are other things that need to change, and the recruitment policy, which won't all be down to Marco Silva. You've got Marcel Brands as the director of football. Their recruitment's just been awful. It's been utterly appalling. So it isn't just simply Marco Silva's fault. It's never just the manager's fault in this case, and that shouldn't be the view of anyone. But Marco Silva seemingly is on the verge, and he is going to go. At Old Trafford, one man that's also under a huge amount of pressure, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I don't know whether the pressure is really eased on him. The looming figure of Mauricio Pochettino is still hanging over Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and even though they won at Old Trafford, I think you look at the game, I think Tottenham were arrogant last night. I thought Jose Mourinho expected to rock up, considering that they're in better form than Manchester United, that they just expected to rock up to Old Trafford and win, and they were dealt a real blow, and again exposing Tottenham's real deficiencies in defence. Again, as I mentioned, it's four straight games at the start of Jose Mourinho's tenure. They've conceded two goals. West Ham, who are out of form. Olympiacos, who've been terrible in the Champions League group stages. Bournemouth, who are out of form. And Manchester United. So that's a pretty poor run. You've conceded eight goals in his first four games. Not a good run at all for Jose Mourinho in terms of defensively at the start of his Tottenham tenure. It's his first defeat. He came in and said he was the humble one. I don't think anyone was believing that one. But this is going to be a real test for Jose Mourinho, but also this squad, as to how they react now to a defeat like this at Old Trafford. It's the first time they've experienced defeat under Jose Mourinho. How will those players react? And also just one thing, with Dele Alli's goal, a fantastic goal it was, I don't think enough has been made of the fact that it should have been ruled out. That I think it hits his arm, and he got away with one against Watford earlier in the season that hit his arm. The fact of the matter is, whether you agree or disagree with the law states that if the ball hits your arm in an attacking sense, whether it's deliberate or accidental, then the goal's ruled out because it's created a goal-scoring opportunity. Well, it hits Dele Alli's arm, not intentionally, but it does hit his arm, and therefore I think it should have been ruled out. But then trying to decipher what VAR is going to do is trying to I don't know what it is. It's an impossible task to try and understand what on earth goes through the minds of those involved on the pitch as a referee and also those at Stockley Park using the VAR, because it is really an absolute joke, and it's probably not worth our bother continuously talking about VAR. If you want to get in touch, not about VAR, because I mean we're all bored and fed up with it, but the matters on the field last night and over the last couple of nights, as well as looking ahead to tonight, any Sheffield United, Newcastle, Arsenal, Brighton fans, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We'll talk a little bit about Norwich later in the hour. Their form is in real disarray at the moment, and they'd have been disappointed not to take anything away from Southampton. But up next, we'll be turning our attention to all things Aston Villa.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We want to hear from you this afternoon. If you want to get in touch, call us on the number 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that number. If you want to get in touch with us, plenty of Premier League action to look back on. Let's just look at the results from last night. Liverpool won 5-2 at home against Everton in the Merseyside. Derby, Manchester United beat Tottenham 2-1. Leicester won 2-0 at home against Watford. Wolves beat West Ham 2-0. And Southampton, a big result down near the bottom of the table. They beat Norwich by 2-1 tonight. Two more fixtures, Sheffield United playing Newcastle and Arsenal are taking on Brighton. The other result from last night was at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea won 2-1 at home against Aston Villa. Let's get the Villa perspective now. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Max Stokes from the Villa on Tour YouTube channel. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Max. It was another game against one of the so-called Big Six where Dean Smith's side have been competitive. They opened the scoring in four of their five matches against established top six opponents this season, but they've only managed to get 1 point out of all those games. How frustrating has that been, and does being competitive in this game or in these types of games, does that really mean anything?
I think it is a little bit of a worry because, you know, at the end of the season, we're not going to be anywhere near these established top six sides. But even still, there's lots of positives to take. You know, going to these big grounds, especially away from home, and you know, taking the lead and being competitive. A lot of promoted sides, you know, the average Premier League fan would expect the promotion sides to go there and get battered 3-4, 5-0 every single time. But in every game, we've been competitive, but we've only come away with 1 point against the top six sides that we've played this season, and that was against Man United on Sunday. So it is a little bit of a concern that we're not taking advantages of the good performances that we do put in against the good sides. But, you know, we've got to move on. I'm not too bothered if we don't beat the big sides, because at the end of the season, like I said, we're not going to be near them. It's just the sides around us that, you know, if we do play well against the poorer sides and we don't get results, that's where I start to worry. But it's not too much of a concern. We've played a lot of the top six already and we're not, you know, in the relegation zone. So that's a positive. But yeah, like you said, it is a little bit of a concern. But as long as we beat the sides around us, that's all I'm bothered about really at this stage.
After last night's game, Max, it's just one win on the road this season for Villa. Now, as we've just been talking about, there have been a number of games that Villa have played away from home at the so-called Big Six. So Chelsea, Manchester City, Arsenal, Manchester United, Tottenham. So they've played a lot of those sides away from home already. So does that kind of change that statistic? Because if Villa were playing more away games at sides around them, would that statistic be better? Or is that a slightly concerning statistic that away from Villa Park, Aston Villa are struggling to get positive results?
To be fair, I think away form has been our issue in probably the last 3 years. I think last year in the Championship, obviously, it was quite good and that's why we got promoted. But, you know, even before that, our away form was the issue. But we have, you know, in the last 3 years when we've been in the Championship, our home form has been what's done us so well. And, you know, I know we've got Leicester on Sunday and that's at Villa Park. So that does give me a lot of confidence. And I think we have been good at Villa Park so far this season. But away from home is a bit of an issue. I think we've taken four points from a possible 24 on the road. Obviously, we beat Norwich 5-1 and got a point at Man United. And that's literally all we've got on the road this season. So that is a little bit of a concern. But we're still not in the relegation zone. But still, if we can pick up this away form and just keep our good home form, I think that's a really good positive to build on. Like I touched on a minute ago, I think our home form is very, very good. You know, we've taken the game to pretty much every single side at home. I know we lost to Bournemouth towards the start of the season, but that was just a blip. That was the first home game this season. But every single home game, we've pretty much put in a good account of ourselves, and especially in the Liverpool game, we were 3 minutes away from winning that game. So home form's the one. If we can pick up our away form, I think we'll have a successful season and push on towards mid-table. So yeah, just work on the away form, and I think we'll be absolutely fine.
In last night's game, Max, Tammy Abraham scored. Obviously, he was on loan at Villa last season, where he scored 25 league goals in 38 Championship matches. Now, obviously, Villa spent big money on bringing Wesley Moraishin from Club Brugge over the summer. He's shown glimpses of some good play, but does last night's game show that how lucky Villa were to have Abraham last season, how much maybe Villa are missing Tammy Abraham in that he's not with them anymore?
Yeah, I love Tammy Abraham. I think he's an absolutely fantastic footballer. I think he's a lovely guy. Like, when he was at Villa last season, he just came across as a really likeable person. We really miss him. I think I'd be lying towards the end of last season. I'd be lying if I thought he'd come into the Premier League and do this well. He's been absolutely fantastic for Chelsea. He's got a bit of everything for such a tall sort of, thin guy. With the ball at his feet, he's fantastic. He wins balls in the air and he scores so many goals. He's always in the right place at the right time. And, the transfer ban that Chelsea got is a little bit frustrating, because if they didn't have that ban, they might have gone out and spent 60 million on a striker like they did with Higuain and Morata in the past. But instead, they've been forced to use the likes of Abraham and Mount. And it is a little bit frustrating, because I don't know what goes on behind the scenes at Villa, but we maybe could have got him. And if we had him in this Villa side now, with the service that we could potentially provide for him, I think he'd work so, so well. But instead, like you said, we've got Wesley. He comes under a lot of pressure from the fans, obviously, because he's a new signing, big number nine. You expect him to score goals, and he hasn't done that in the last few weeks. I thought he was good at Man United on Sunday. He was isolated for a lot of the game, gave Maguire a tough game, but like I said, he finds himself fairly isolated all the time. For me, I think he still could be doing a little bit more. He came under a lot of stick, especially yesterday against Chelsea. He just doesn't seem to get the service as well. I think that's a bit of an issue. He doesn't seem to get the service. He's not. I think his positioning could do with a little bit of work. But back to Tammy Abraham. I think if he was in this Villa side, we would potentially be in a better place. But I've still got a lot of love for Tammy Abraham. I know the Villa fans were chanting his name yesterday, probably louder than the Chelsea fans. So there's still a lot of love there. And I definitely do miss Tammy.
And one man that is receiving quite a lot of praise so far this season is Jack Grealish. People continue to wax lyrical about him. If I'm being honest, Max, I don't really know kind of where he should be, where his quality kind of is merited being in the Premier League table. Do you think that next summer, for example, do you think top four clubs will be queuing up to sign him? Do you think he's that good already, or do you think he's still got a little bit more to prove, a couple more years in the Premier League before we can start talking about him as a potential Champions League player?
For me, I watch him every single week. I watch him for 90 minutes every single game, and I think he could walk into any team in the Premier League, bar possibly Liverpool, I'm not too sure, but He's absolutely fantastic. His dribbling, his close control, everything like that is something that I just don't see from a lot of players in the Premier League, especially English ones as well. And we've got the third richest owners at Aston Villa in the league. So they've said in the past, especially in the summer where we lost the playoff final, everybody thought that Grealish would go. Even me, I thought he'd go. We'd have to sell our main players just to stay afloat as a football club. But the new owners pretty much saved us. They injected a lot of money in and they allowed us to keep Jack Grealish. And I think if his performances keep going, he'll get into the England squad. And then even then, the top four clubs will see him in the England squad and think, we could take a punt on this lad. But I think, he could stay at Villa all his life if he really wants to. I know he loves the club. But Villa are going in the right direction. If we stay up this year, we'll progress, we'll become a mid-table club, and then hopefully we can push on to, maybe 10th and above. And hopefully Jack Grealish will be that man to take us there. He's still only 24, he's still got, 6, 7, 8 years right at the top level. So I don't think there's any rush for him to go to a top four club. But in my opinion, watching him every week, I think he could slip in there no problem at all. But I don't think we'll go in the summer. No, I think our owners are very adamant on keeping him, keeping the main core of the squad that's got us to where we are today. So, they'll be interested 100% because he's a fantastic footballer, but I just don't think he'll go just yet. Maybe in the future, who knows? But right now, I think he's a Villa player and I think he'll stay that way.
So up next for Villa, they will host second place Leicester on Sunday. Now, obviously, Leicester aren't necessarily one of the so-called big six, but the quality they're showing this season, they're looking good for a top four position. So this is going to be another big test against, even though, as I said, they're not one of the so-called big six this season. They're certainly performing like a big six side. Do you think at home, though, against Leicester, that the Villa have got a good chance of pushing for a win on Sunday?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I think on paper, this game is probably harder than the Man United and Chelsea games we've just played. But like you said, at home, I do fancy us. And I think there's no doubt about it. We'll give Leicester a game on Sunday. But no, I've probably said that. They'll probably score us 4-0. But no, I think we'll give them a game at home. We've been very, very good at home so far this season, like I touched on earlier. You know, Jamie Vardy's been absolutely marvellous this season. He's incredible. James Maddison as well. A lot of comparison between him and Grealish. But, you know, they've got a lot of quality all over the park and they don't concede a lot of goals as well. I think they haven't even conceded 10 so far this season, I don't think. They're absolutely fantastic. If we can get an early goal, though, you know, we've taken a lead in a lot of games. I think if the games this season ended at half-time, we'd be second in the table. I know that means absolutely nothing, but still, I think if we score an early goal, you know, keep it tight at the back, which we haven't done in recent weeks, to be fair, I think we'll give them a game 100%. I'll probably take a point right now, but at home, you've got to go into it confident. You know, if the atmosphere is good, hopefully we can see the right Villa turn up. But I'd probably take a point in this game.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Max. That was Max Stokes from the Villa On Tour YouTube channel. Obviously, looking back at last night's game, Villa falling 2-1 away at Chelsea. And I think I'd probably agree in terms of the quality of opposition that Leicester is a more difficult challenge at this moment in time than Chelsea and Manchester United. But obviously, Villa are at home, which is easier than playing away in those games. But I think at home, Villa are a very different prospect away. Although, as I mentioned, in a lot of those games where they've played against the big six, they've been competitive. You think of Tottenham, they were 1-0 up with 15 minutes to go and crumbled right at the end of that game early in the season. How on earth they lost away at Arsenal when Arsenal were down to 10 men for over a half and they were 2-1 up in that game against my beloved Liverpool. They were 1-0 up until the 87th minute and we came back to win 2-1 against Manchester City for a half. It was 0-0. They were in that game. At Manchester United, they drew 2-2 last night, only losing by a goal against Chelsea. They've been competitive in these games. Now, ultimately, as we all know, football is a results-driven business. And at some point, those competitive performances have to produce results. But is Aston Villa's season going to be dictated by their result at Stamford Bridge last night? No, it probably isn't. But you just feel like they are competitive in their performances, which is a good thing at the moment. But in 2 months' time, if their form isn't great and they're in and around the relegation zone, then it won't necessarily matter and it won't take on that much importance. But a really interesting one on Sunday at Villa Park. Aston Villa host Leicester. It'll be good to see what Villa are like at home and also Leicester away at Villa Park. Will Leicester be able to continue what's a really good run? 7 straight wins for Leicester. They are certainly on a good run. If you want to get in touch, Villa Leicester fans, call us on 0208 70 2558. Share your views on your clubs. How are you doing, Villa fans? Do those competitive performances need to result in wins? And Leicester fans, can you continue this good run you're on? Up next, we'll be turning our attention to all things Norwich.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Obviously, we're looking back at all of the Premier League action. It's so brilliant when we either have Premier League football or Champions League football. It just adds an extra bit of spice. And this week, there's been so many good storylines, whether it be at Anfield in the Merseyside derby last night, whether it be at Old Trafford, whether it be the relegation scrap down the bottom on the south coast at St Mary's Stadium, where Southampton won 2-1 at home against Norwich. We're going to get the Canaries' perspective now. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Chris Gorham from BBC Radio Norfolk. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Chris. I'm sure for Norwich fans that made the trip to the south coast last night, they would have come away with it thinking, how on earth did we not come away with something that in the final stages, Emiliano Buendia, Sam Byram had opportunities to potentially equalise. I'm guessing it was a rather frustrating night for Daniel Farke and his side.
Yeah, frustrating is one word for it, certainly. And you talked about what happened in the closing stages of the game. But I think from a Norwich City supporters' point of view, it's what happened in the first half that is occupying the mind, because the Norwich performance was so disappointing. It was the same team that played so well against Arsenal on Sunday. It wasn't far away from the lineup that they beat Everton in their last away game. And I think Norwich fans turned up last night in confident mood. But the first half performance just wasn't anywhere near what they'd done in the previous two games. And to compound that, they then conceded two goals from set pieces. And Daniel Farke, the day before the game, had pointed out what a danger they would be with James Ward-Prowse on the free kicks and on the corners, and had urged his team not to give away any silly free kicks or needless corners. And lo and behold, that's what they did. And they found themselves 2-0 down, with Southampton not really having to play particularly well to get those two goals. There were signs of life in the second half. It was a much better performance. Pukki's goal made it interesting. And yeah, Norwich could quite easily have got a late equaliser. But I think the way they played in the first half, I think that is what has annoyed Norwich fans more than anything, because it was a missed opportunity last night.
It was interesting to see, Chris, that at one point in the game, Daniel Farke slightly changed tactics, changed formation, going to a three-man central defence, and then perhaps meaning that Onel Hernandez could provide more support for Timu Pukki, perhaps showing and I suppose a positive for Daniel Farke to himself personally, his tactical adaptability. That first half, as you mentioned, Norwich weren't really at the races, but after that tactical change, Norwich came more into the game and created chances. So in that sense, even though the result wasn't good and what they would have hoped for, in terms of the manager's tactical flexibility, that's a positive to take forward.
I think what Daniel Farke did last night just underlined how unhappy he was with the performance, because he's a head coach with a reputation for not making substitutions particularly early. He tends to like to leave it late in the game. So the fact he made a double substitution at half time last night, I think that told you all you needed to know about what he felt about his team's first half performance. And I think, you know, he's been tested. Daniel Farke has been severely tested this season. Whenever I've been on the show before, Kieran, I've talked about the injury problems that Norwich have had. And this is probably the first game where that doesn't really count as an excuse, that they've had defeats before, that they've had poor runs before. But I've always been keen to cut them some slack, because the injury problems had been awful. This is only the third game, really, that they've had two fit central defenders since August. And Zimmerman's return to the team and everyone playing in their proper position, it made a massive difference. That the win at Everton, the point against Arsenal, both good performances and both very well deserved. So the fact that they haven't kicked on and have produced a below par performance when they did have everybody playing in the right position, that's the first time that's really happened this season. And I think that's why it's one that will annoy Daniel Farke immensely.
Another goal last night for Timu Pukki, who's now got to 8 goals for the season. Half of Norwich's goals this season, obviously showing how key a player he is. Now, there were some thoughts that after a great start, he had kind of really plateaued and really was struggling for goals, but he is still contributing. So it shows that if Norwich can get the ball forward to him, if they can give him that support, give him chances, this guy's going to score goals.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily go along with the fact that he was out of form for a while either, because he scored in the win against Manchester City and didn't score again for Norwich until they played Arsenal on Sunday. But in between that time, he scored 5 goals for his country, 5 goals for Finland, and goals that took them to Euro 2020. So I don't think he was ever out of form. I think it was just Norwich with the selection problems that they had and the players playing out of position. They were actually struggling to create chances for him. Big plus last night that they were able to create a chance for him, and he took it brilliantly. And I think he'll keep doing that. Keeping him fit, free of suspension, I mean, that's going to be absolutely key, because the one thing that Norwich do have that will hopefully keep them alive in this survival battle for as long as possible is that there are goals in that team. And I think you can say the same about Southampton. I wasn't particularly impressed with them in the first half last night, but they've got Danny Ings. They've got a striker who is in form and is one of the few that has outscored Pukki this season. And I think when you've got players like that, Ings at Southampton, Pukki at Norwich, then you've always got a chance. Norwich are going to score goals this season. The big question mark has been whether they can stop conceding them. Clean sheets recently at Everton and Bournemouth, we thought maybe that they'd found a way of doing that. But last night, just sloppy goals to give away. So there's a lot of work still to be done. They play Sheffield United at home on Sunday. Big game, of course. You know, two sides who know each other very well from the Championship last season. And then the game after that is away at Leicester. So, you know, Norwich, you feel need to get something on Sunday, or we're going to get back to the point where they're going to start to be cut off from the rest. That they've done so well. 4 points from 2 games. They've got themselves well and truly back in touch. But with Southampton winning last night, that gap's just beginning to open up again.
As you mentioned there, finally, Chris, that next game at home against fairly newly promoted side Sheffield United on Sunday. Obviously, this is the time of year where we're seeing a lot of managerial changes, managers gone, managers on the verge of going. I'm assuming that, obviously, no one's ever unsackable and you're never exempt from any criticism, but do you think Daniel Farke is in a safe enough position that even if things don't go brilliantly, and I'm sure Norwich fans won't want to hear me say this, even if they were to go down, do you think he's safe in that job?
I do at the moment, yeah, I absolutely do, because one thing that the Norwich City have said, Daniel Farke has said it, Stuart Webber, the sporting director, has said it, look, Norwich are 19th in the Premier League. Is anybody really that surprised? I don't think they are. I think even Norwich fans knew that this season was going to be difficult. The injury problems I've mentioned have made it even more difficult. I think Norwich would prefer to look at a team like a Burnley, who actually did go down a few seasons ago, stuck with Sean Dyche, and he brought them back up, and now they're in a much stronger position. So at the moment, Daniel Farke certainly isn't under any threat at all. But as you've just said, nobody's unsackable. If they go on a really bad run, if it gets to January and even beyond, and they're not doing so well, then you just never know. But you know, the performances recently against Everton, against Arsenal, have suggested that Daniel Farke is capable of getting more out of the players than he did last night. So I don't think he's got any need to be concerned or worried about his job at the moment. He's certainly not under pressure from the board or the fans at Norwich City. But we do need to see a little bit more than we saw from the team last night, I think that's for sure.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Chris. That was Chris Gorham from BBC Radio Norfolk, who was at St Mary's yesterday covering the game for BBC Radio Norfolk, and a frustrating one for Norwich, going 2-1 down away at Southampton. They were outplayed in the first half, played well in the second half, and could have even got an equaliser. They may be frustrated they didn't get a point. They play Sheffield United on Sunday. Just a rundown then of what's happened over the last couple of evenings and what's coming up tonight in the Premier League. On Tuesday night, we had two games. Crystal Palace playing most of the game down to 10 men, but winning 1-0 at home against Bournemouth. Manchester City being back to their best, really. They won 4-1 away at Burnley. Some pretty good goals by the Manchester City players. Then last night, Goodison Park at Anfield. Liverpool won 5-2 at home against Everton. Nearly a year to the day. It was December 2nd last year in 2018 that Divock Origi scored in the 96th minute. What a goal that was. Bouncing twice on the bar and Origi just heading it in. And then a year and 2 days later, Liverpool destroying Everton at Anfield. Origi being one of the stars of the show. Marco Silva, under increasing pressure, could go today. Manchester United won 2-1 at home against Tottenham. Chelsea beat Aston Villa 2-1. Leicester won 2-0 at home against Watford. Wolves won 2-0 at home against West Ham. And Southampton, as we were just talking about just a moment ago, won 2-1 at home against Norwich. Coming up tonight, we have two more fixtures to round off the midweek fixtures in the Premier League. Sheffield United take on Newcastle. That's a 7:30 kickoff at Bramall Lane. And then at the Emirates at 8:15. Arsenal without a manager as it stands, or permanent manager, Freddie Ljungberg, an interim head coach, interim head coach position. Arsenal still no closer really to an appointment. They host Graham Potter's Brighton to finish off these midweek fixtures.
This is Love Sport.